Frank Ventura is going to talk with us about security, how to secure our computers, programs to help us to stay away from viruses and spyware and all that, and good practices.
Security really starts, you know, from day one, really having a good strategy as to what to do to keep yourself safe and actually knowing what you want to keep yourself safe from. How many people have never taken a computer out of a box and set one up themselves? Because you're missing out on probably the biggest part of security. That's how you set up your computer. In front of me here, I have a brand new Windows PC. I took this out of the box this morning, and I kind of fiddled around enough till I found the power button. What I want to show you here is how, like, to set things up to give you a little bit extra added protection. And I'm using a Windows 8 laptop that I just got, but these concepts apply to Mac or even to Linux as well. The first thing we're going to do is go through the setup screens of Windows. In case anybody's wondering, this is a Lenovo Yoga. This did come pre-installed with Windows. I think most of us have probably bought the computers with an operating system on it. Has anyone ever bought a bare-bones computer? No. Okay. This computer did come out of the box this morning. It has Windows 8 or 8.1. I'm not sure which one it has. And technically, yes, it has a screen reader. It's Windows Narrator. If you're setting up a Windows PC to get it to run, all I did was I just hit Windows U at the first startup screen. A couple of things you want to do is that if it's a laptop computer, I always plug it in for about 20, 30 minutes before I start it up the first time. Just get enough of a surface charge on the battery, just in case someone comes along and unplugs you while you're doing this. Desktop computer, well, obviously you don't have that option here. So I plugged in this morning, got about 20 minutes, I hit Windows U as soon as I sat down here, and we're getting Windows Narrator. And I'm going to tab through the first screen, see if you can hear this.
Keyboard layout. US. Read only.
Okay, so we do have a US keyboard layout. And by the way, I actually plugged a full-size USB external keyboard in for two reasons. A, because I could sit back here and talk in a better position. And B, I don't know if this computer is going to go back. I'm going to keep it so I'd rather not get too many of my paw prints all over it. So.
Next button. Ease of access button.
And I'm just using tab key.
Country/region. United States.
Okay, first thing we come to is country/region. This actually is significant because there are some updates to some programs, including Windows and Office, that actually do have updates by region. So if it's wrong, you may actually run into some problems with that. Also some other issues with as far as licensing of software. Sometimes I've actually heard of people not being able to play a DVD because they have their country region set wrong on the computer. They think that you're in Zimbabwe, but you're actually in Boston. So that DVD won't play?
Locale, English, United States.
Okay, English, well, that's a good language.
Keyboard layout, US.
US
read
English.
Only, next button.
Okay.
Shortcut Alt plus N.
I've got to hit next.
Alert save, I accept these license terms for Windows and this PC, uncheck checkbox.
And it wants me to accept the license terms for Windows, meaning that I won't do anything that tells me not to do pirate the software or use it at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Check.
Tuesday, I don't know. Whatever it says, I never read them, but I guess some.
Accept
does.
Button.
And I'm going to
shortcut button. Next button. PC name. Editing explorable text. Idea PC.
Okay, let's change the name of this.
Back. Back.
Anybody have a good name for computer?
Weimar.
Well, shift.
I was hoping somebody would say that. Okay.
Next button. Set up Windows. Pane. Focus on MIT. 1 of 2. Non-selected.
Okay.
Collapsed.
And it does something very interesting here. It actually asks you what network to connect to. I'm a little leery sometimes about this. You want to do this on a good, secure network. Unfortunately, we don't have one. But so what I'm going to do, just for the sake of argument, is that I'm going to actually skip past this for now.
Connect to a hidden wire.
If you're at home and you're on a safe network, then it's no prompting. So I'm not suggesting you don't do this. I just don't like to do it on public networks. And we'll talk more about that in a minute.
Connect to a wireless. Connect button. Ease of access. Back button.
Very interesting here. It actually will not. I'm just tabbing around here. It's actually not letting me do this. There's always a way here.
Collapse.
Once you pass through those questions, can you go through the second time?
Well, you could go backwards. I mean, you're not going to set up your computer more than once unless you reformat it. But
if you want to change that MIT later on.
Oh, yeah, certainly, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Airplane, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, personal hotspot. Personal hotspot on.
Are you tethering your phone to the
laptop? Yes.
Can we do that on any iPhone?
Technically, yes, yeah. Depending on who carrier is, you may have to pay extra, but the technology is built into every iPhone.
Have the back button. Feature. Shortcut Alt plus. Connect to a wireless network later. Link. Shortcut Alt plus L. Use Express Settings button. Shortcut Alt plus E.
And Windows 8, there's a whole bunch of little things you could change. You don't really need to do that. I just take the default settings.
Username, editing explorable
text. Now, this is the important part, and this is what one of the things I want everyone to take away from this presentation. It's asking me for a username. So let's talk about user accounts. How many people log onto a computer at work that asks for account name, password?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you log on with your account at work, what can you and can you not do? Obviously, you could do your work. You could check your email. You could use your databases. Whatever your productivity software is, you could use. But what can't you do? Anybody want to throw out in there?
Install software.
Okay. Very good.
Change certain system settings.
Change settings, yeah. And the reason for that is that every account could have different security privileges. For instance, at work, I have a security card. It could get me into my department, but I can't go to a different floor and get into someone else's department. There's different levels of security. For instance, a full administrator account on a computer could probably do anything, with the exception of it connected to a domain, like a domain administrator or something like that. You could do anything locally on the computer. You could install software, change settings, create other accounts. A limited access account, a restricted user account, could do just about what we're talking about, like your account at work. You could run the computer, but you can't install certain modifications. And there's all sorts of different levels in between that you could create, or your system administrator could create as well. Let's think about how people use their computers at home. How many people, and again, we're going to do a little survey here, have only one account on their computer?
Okay.
So if you have only one account on a computer, every computer has to have at least one administrator account that could administer the computer. So that means if you have only one account, you're using an administrator account. So any time that you are using a computer, that account has privilege to do all those things we talked about, install software, make changes, delete things, add things in. Is there any time you wouldn't want that? Okay.
If you have children using your computer too.
Okay. What kind of things do you think the children could do?
Download all sorts of crap.
Crap? What kind of crap?
Games. Weird videos, weird games.
Viruses.
Malware.
Viruses, malware. Okay. So I think we all agree now that stuff could get installed that you may not want with an administrator account. Is there ever a time that it could happen without your knowledge?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Short answer is yes. I mean, there's times when you could go to a website and there's scripts running on that website that can install malicious software. Or you could open up an email with a malicious attachment. Your buddy could give you a Trojan on his thumb drive. It looks like a Lady Gaga song, but it's really a piece of malware. I guess they're both crap, but... So if you were to do any of those things I just mentioned, ran a Trojan horse, or went to that website, you opened up the infected attachment, what would happen?
The computer runs slow.
Well, why would it run slow? Because something got installed, right?
Yeah.
Could it? And do you think you would have known that it got installed?
Not necessarily.
No.
Not immediately.
You may not know that what you're doing is installing software. So there's a concept known as least privileged access, meaning that the account that you're using, and this is why your computer's set up like this at work, has the least privilege necessary to do the tasks you want. In an office or a network environment, you may be several different layers of access, depending on the needs of the system administrator. He may have full administrators, he may have domain administrators, forest level administrators, local administrators, backup operators, and then restricted users. I don't think you need that at home. Typically, you need two levels of access. Administrator access for installing things when you want to get stuff installed, and a user account for restricted access for when you're doing your day-to-day tasks. You may actually have several different accounts depending on how many people use the computer. So the first account you always set up, and this is true both Windows and Mac, and I guess it works in Linux too, is that it's always going to be an administrator account. So it's asking me for a name, and I'm not very creative, so I usually title my first administrator account admin, A-D-M-I-N.
Password field.
And this account you should always have a password on. So I'm just going to make up a password.
Re-enter password. Password hint. Editing explorable text.
And it gives you a chance to put a password hint. That's optional. I mean, it's just one level of security that if you want to leave that blank, it makes things a little less secure. Like someone mentioned in the case of the children, if you have a choice for a password hint, they may be able to guess your hint. Like, what's grandma's maiden name?
Finish button. Set up Windows. Pane. Focus on...
Okay, so now it's setting up the account.
We're getting your PC ready. This will take a few minutes. Please don't turn off your PC.
No, it's actually Windows that's doing that. If you disable sound enhancements in the sound control panel, it affects that That makes that a lot better.
You know, on the commission, or you actually set up my computer, and with the admin and the other, how can you how come you can just press enter and the password goes away, or the admin?
Oh, okay, then there's no password installed if there is. If that's the case, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Still protects you from.
Well, yes and no. Not
create a password.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of protection, but not.
Start menu. Pane. Focus on mail.
Okay, so now we're actually in the computer itself.
D. Window opened. Snap desktop.
So, okay, so the computer actually is set up. So now we're actually at the desktop here. We have Narrator running. So for anyone who hasn't set up a computer out of the box, that's really all there is to it now. So at this point, I usually like to install any type of accessibility software that I may or may not need. Like, for instance, in this case, I'm going to put JAWS on the computer. So let's do that.
Other user.
And I have it already downloaded for the sake of saving time.
If you haven't set up administrative account with a password
tool
afterwards.
Yes, okay.
Window
can
open.
Do that. It's a little. It's kind of like backwards, but you definitely can set up accounts like that.
Windows, tooltip, add autoplay installers. E, tap, double, search, pane, focus on search box, editing explorable text, apps, settings, selected, 2 of 30, settings, search, pane, down arrow, escape, window. Double. Activate Windows. Go to PC settings to activate Windows. Program Manager. Pane. Activate Windows. Go to PC. Tab. Start menu. Computer window. Focus on devices with.
Okay. So I do have it on a thumb drive. And
installers. E.
And I'm gonna.
J. Up arrow. Zoom Text Mac. SomniPay. Up arrow. Tooltip. Type. Windows installer package. J. Zoom name. Details. Desktop. Split button. End of line. Zoom name. Collapsed. Details. Select desktop. Split button.
Okay, so to run an installer, you would just go through your normal, whatever it is, if you draw a Zoom text, etc. We're not going to go through all that for the sake of time.
If you don't want to use Narrator, there is another option too.
Alt.
Which is that if you have a free SA2Go account, you can go to the Run Dialog and type www.satogo.com, and you can install that. And as long as you've got an active internet connection, that will work. That's a little better than Narrator.
It reads it fairly well, but
it's, okay.
I mean, it's better than it always ever has been, but it could be better, I think. The next step after I install my accessibility software is that I want to create an account for myself. Remember we talked about, you know, least privilege access. You have the person with the administrator account and the person with the least privileged account. So I'm going to open up a Run Dialog.
Windows, Run Dialog.
And I'm going to open up the user settings and don't worry about remembering commands or anything like that because I'm going to send out to the list,
see,
you know, a little bit of a synopsis of this.
User accounts dialog. Focus on users must enter a username and password to use this computer. Check checkbox. Alt plus E.
Okay, so the way it's set up now is that it will ask for what account you want to use. This is in the control panel, by the way. I'm going to add an account for Frank.
Users tab. Right. Advanced. Manage password. Advanced button. Alt plus space. Window opened. Lusreen. Local users and groups. Local. Window. Focus on local users. Users. Context menu. Window opened. Lusreen. New user. Menu item.
And I'm going to
menu
get to menu
key
item. It says new user. I got that with the applications key. This is just in Windows 8. It's similar in most other versions of Windows. If you're using like a Mac, it's under system preferences, under users, but it's all the same.
Enter. New user dialog. Focus on username. Editing explorable text.
Okay, username. I usually put my own name, or if it's saying it for someone else, I'd, you know, put up their name in.
Shift
F. What did you go click on in control panel, though?
Users, then I went to the advanced user management, then I right-clicked on that with the applications key and said add new user.
Full name. Description. Password.
And for my account, I don't put a password because I'm the only person using this computer. If you were in, say, a multiple user environment, say you have 5 people in your family, you're probably going to have a password on your account so someone else doesn't use your account.
Confirm password. User must change password at next logon. Check checkbox. Alt. Unchecked. User cannot change password. Unchecked checkbox.
There's a 70,
Alt plus F.
One of the choices is user cannot change password. Very important. Why would you want to prevent a user from changing their password?
Because you don't want someone to go in and change other computer settings. And
correct. Someone or maybe something.
Check. Yeah. Password never expires. Unchecked. Check. Account is disabled. Unchecked. Checkbox. Create button. Username. Editing explorable text. Local users and groups. User accounts dialog. Focus on users must enter a username and password to use this computer. Check checkbox.
I'm going to uncheck Alt plus that. E.
Window opened. Admin. Frank.
Because I want users to automatically log on to my account. For instance, when I reboot the computer, I don't want it to go into the Windows sign-on part where it says what account do you want to use. I'm going to uncheck it. So
unchecked. Okay, but automatically sign in dialog. Focus on password. Path. Confirm. Okay. Space. All control panel items window. Focus on action center.
Okay. So now my account is created. I set it so it's going to log directly into my account. Again, you're probably not going to want to do that if you're in a multiple user scenario. So I'm going to reboot the computer and it should reboot right into
Windows.
My account.
What do you want the...
Okay. So it's going to restart.
Oh, you didn't do a control alt delete
then? Nah.
User can't change password thing work? Because I'm assuming you want to be able to change your own password, even if you don't want anybody else to be able to.
Well, here's the thing. Remember, you have access to the administrator account. So you want to only be able to do that in the administrator account. You don't want the least privileged user to be able to do that, because that's the case that anything else could do that as well.
If someone has had an administrator on their administrator account and been using it for a year or so, then they want to add security by creating a least privileged access. Once they create that, they're not going to be able to see all their files in there.
There's a trick to doing that. What you want to do here, in that case, you want to create a new account, a new administrator account. So say you have an account on your computer that says Jerry, yeah. And that's an administrator. That's the only account on the computer. So you create a new administrator account called admin or administrator, something like that. So then you log on with the administrator account and back down the privilege level of the Jerry account.
Yeah. And then you'll be able to see everything.
Exactly.
Okay. Make your computer easier to use. Windows will read and scan this list automatically. Press narrator, magnifier, focus.
One of the reasons that it took a long time there is that it was creating a whole new user profile because I logged off and it's logging in as a Frank account now.
Windows sign in, pane, focus on password, submit button, ease of access button, shut down button, switch user button, password, password field, alert the password is incorrect. Windows sign in, pane, focus on switch user button, admin, link. Frank, welcome.
Why is it then that in the workplace, everybody's always so concerned about somebody accidentally bringing a virus in on a thumb drive if they all have the least privileged accounts?
So the next part of the question of the scenario is exactly what Jerry was talking about as far as why is it, you know, dangerous, even though we have restricted user accounts, for things to move between computer to computer. The reason for that is that there is certain pieces of malicious software that actually exploits vulnerabilities in the operating system itself, meaning that no matter what level of access you have, something can affect your system based on a vulnerability in Windows or in Mac OS X. So how do we actually prevent that? Let's talk about Windows XP for a minute. Everyone knows about what's happening on Windows XP.
Always scan this section.
Could anybody give me a 10-second synopsis of what's going to happen next year?
No more support after April.
What kind of support?
Microsoft security.
Fixing
software
attacks.
Exactly. Okay. What's really going away is the ability for Microsoft, or the willingness for that, Microsoft.
Start narrator.
To fix vulnerabilities in the operating system. So when you do a Windows update, what happens is all those important security updates you keep hearing about, they're just that. Or they fix holes that are in the operating system that could be exploited. That's why it's such a big deal that by this time next year, there'll
keyboard.
Be no protection against vulnerabilities in the operating system. Why is it so
Start magnifier.
Why is it such a big deal that even computers that someone's running with a restricted account be vulnerable on a network or even on a wide area network, wide area being out into the internet? The reason for that is that
Screen
the security
keyboard.
We just set up affects what's going on in the user environment, what the user itself could do, but not what the operating system could do or what someone could do to the operating system. So the best way to protect yourself is to make sure that your computer has all of its operating system updates. How do we do that?
Go to Windows Update.
Ah, okay. Very good. Windows Update. Is there anything special we have to do, or is it just that you run it once in a while?
You probably want to schedule it to...
Ah, very good. Yeah. Scheduling of it actually could be very important. I'll tell you why. Because it picks a certain time to install your updates. By default, it's 3 o'clock in the morning for Windows, meaning that most people don't have their computers on at 3 o'clock in the morning on a routine basis. When do those upgrades actually get installed?
When you boot up.
When you boot up, yeah. When is the time that you need to get most of your work done? When you boot up, yeah. A good strategy is to pick a time then when you'd actually be most likely to have the least amount of use on your computer. Maybe you do a lunch break from 12 to 1, or maybe at some point in time you're really just answering phones. That's a better time to check your updates. Windows Update by default, what does it update?
The most critical.
Yes, exactly. By default, when you take a computer out of the box, it updates the most critical updates to the operating system. But what about other products? No, it doesn't. If you go into Windows Update and change your settings so that it gives you updates for Windows and other products, and that's actually the language that it uses. It'll actually say Windows and other products. In fact, I'm going to boot up the other computer, which is already set up, and I'll show you that. Yeah, not all updates require a reboot. Yeah.
Okay.
The ones that do, the ones that get installed in the boot process. Yeah.
There are some updates, you know, always put to set up as a, you know, automatic updates, or we should do it manually, because there are some updates we don't want to install.
Could you give me an example?
Like, say, Internet Explorer 9 is coming and my job doesn't support Internet Explorer 9. And if that update is installed, Internet Explorer is installed.
Okay, the way to handle that situation is that you want to look at the updates that it's suggesting. And it'll give you a list. It'll say security update for this, security update for that, Windows Internet Explorer. You find something that you do not want to install. The solution to that is that you simply go into the context menu and say hide update. And keep in mind, you could eliminate any update that you installed. So, you know, it's not the end of the world if something gets installed. Well, you don't have the opportunity to decline an automatic update, but you do have the opportunity to reverse an automatic update, uninstall. Okay, so I'm going to go Windows Update.
Menu, search box, INDOUPDATE, enter Windows Update, leaving menus, Windows Update, one important update is available link.
And it tells me I have that one important update. Now, if I want to look at that update, I could just hit space on that. But let's look at some of the other choices here.
App, 8 optional updates are available link.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
App, view update history link, app, toolbar desktop, app, control tab, check for updates, app, change settings link.
Change settings. So that's where you actually go to change, you know, time of day, when it does it, all that stuff. Now, if you've never run up Windows Update before, or if it's one of the first times you use it, and it doesn't show on this one because I already did it, there is a link in there that says find out more. Does anybody know what that link tells you, does? What that does is it changes Windows Update to Microsoft Update or vice versa. They have two different names. Anyway, what that means is that by default, Windows Update only installs, like Tim told us, the most important security updates. However, if you click on Find Out More, it gives you a box to say, I agree to terms of service, yes. Then it will install all updates to products that are installed that it has updates for. What kind of things can it update? It could give you updates for hardware drivers. It could give you updates for stuff like Silverlight or Microsoft Security Essentials, that type of thing. And very important, it could also give you updates to Microsoft Office. Has anybody ever tried updating the Office?
Yes.
Yeah. Very important.
One thing that I used to know how to get rid of, but I don't since they changed Windows Update, is how do you get rid of all the optional languages that I don't want to install, and I don't want to see those as available updates?
So you have like Windows Ultimate, I would assume? Something like
yeah.
That. If you get Windows 7 Ultimate, I think even Windows Vista Ultimate, the language packs are free. There's no extra charge for them. So they come across as Windows updates. Interestingly enough, you could do a couple different things. You could just go and hide all 35 of them if you got the chance, if you have the time to do that.
Someone I know accept an update for their hardware, like a Dell update or
a driver update.
Was it just a driver update?
Yeah.
And it wrecked pretty much everything. I don't even know what happened, but he was wondering whether to accept, you know, actual hardware updates.
Where did you see the update being available? Was it in Windows Update or was it in the Dell update utility that comes pre-installed on the computer?
He didn't say specifically. He just said that he saw something that said Dell update is available,
yeah,
and he accepted it.
Yeah.
And it did some type of damage, and he wondered if it was really reasonable to accept hardware update.
That computer came pre-installed with software from Dell to communicate with Dell to add in new features and new...
Yes.
Yeah. That stuff, you generally is something that, when we'll, it's actually a word for that, we'll talk about in a minute. What I'm talking about now is updates that are offered through Windows Update. And that's really the only place as far as software, you know, hardware drivers and that sort of stuff that I actually do recommend that you do get updates from. You know, if you have a piece of hardware that's working fine, like pick a scanner or something like that, and there's really no need to actually update the drivers. Some people even say that, you know, that could cause problems. Yeah, you never know. If it's not broken, don't fix it, sort type of thing. But if it comes through Windows Update, it's been tested, it's safe, and sometimes it's even better to do so.
Are you going to talk more about the find out more? Or what do we do?
Okay, it's pretty simple. When you're in Windows Update, you tap around, there's a link to find out more. And it actually opens up the Microsoft website. And then there's a little checkbox that you have to say, I agree to the terms of service. Then there's a button that says install. And that will actually install the updated Windows Update. We actually will give you updates to other products.
Is that good or bad?
That's very good. Because that's really the only way that Windows Update will give you updates to things like Microsoft Office or, you know, a hardware driver that it needs to be updated, that sort of stuff. When you click on that Find Out More link, mm-hmm. it brings up the Microsoft site where there's a little checkbox that says you agree to the terms and a button that says install. What will happen when you try to install it?
It's going to ask you, right, whether you...
Okay, yeah. Yes. Now, if you listen to the first part of the demonstration and you set up that security account, remember, now you can't install stuff without permission, right? So what is it going to... It's going to ask you... User account control is going to pop up.
Password.
It's going to ask you for a password. Which password are you going to have to enter?
The
administrator password. Okay.
Tab. New update history link. Shift tab. Install updates. Shift tab. 9 optional updates.
And you see there's optional updates.
Space. List view. Definition update for Microsoft Security Essentials -KB2.
Okay. So you can see that one of them is a definition update for the antivirus software.
List view. Broadcom Corporation -Bluetooth controller -ThinkPad Bluetooth 3.0.
Okay, that's a hardware update.
Not checked. Lenovo -LCD. Other hard.
It's not a hardware update.
Not checked. Synaptics -Other hard.
More hardware updates.
Update for Windows 7 for X60. Not checked. Update for Windows 7 for X. Not checked. Update for Windows 7 for not checked. Bing Bar 7.
And these are all option up. At the bottom, there's something called Bing Bar. Anybody ever see that?
Yeah, that's a search engine.
That's a toolbar. Yeah, it's a toolbar. And very nicely, it's a lot of extra features to Internet Explorer. It makes your screen reader go crazy.
Frank, when you're going down the list there, I know you have a Windows 8 computer, and I heard a few updates.
I just switched from the Windows 8 to the Windows 7. I just wanted to show you setting up the Windows 8 computer. This is now back to the Windows 7 one right now, because I think this is probably more common.
One of the things, that there was a Bluetooth update, there was a Lenovo.
Yeah.
Would you install those?
I would, yeah. Generally, the stuff that comes to Windows Update's been pretty well tested out. What should I install in the computer? And we talked a lot about antivirus software.
I mean, on my computer, I'm sure a lot of people have the same thing. When I go to shutdown, in the shutdown menu, one of my options is
shut down, install
updates and shut down, and I usually just do it. What am I actually installing when I do that?
You're installing all the important updates, not the optional ones.
And all the important is just Windows related, or would that be Office related too? Or
if you do what we were talking about just before, as far as go to find out more information and upgrade the Windows update, the important updates would also include stuff for Office, if it's considered a security update, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about adding software into the computer. And we'll start with antivirus software. Who knows, just in a general sense, what antivirus software actually does?
Look for changes to the system files. One of the things it might do is that.
In its purest form, what it's looking for, items that have changed on a computer, meaning usually system files, items in the registry, and sometimes even items itself that it happens to know as in the memory processes. What does that actually mean? It's looking for things that have already occurred. Antivirus only tells you that your computer has already been infected. It doesn't really do a whole lot as far as protecting you from being infected. That's a misconception. Protecting yourself from being infected was the first two parts of this. A, making sure that you have good system-level security, that you're not the problem, and B, that the operating system itself is not the problem, making sure that's well-patched. Virus software usually just tells you what has always happened. And usually the cause of what always happened is one of those two different things. Either you did something or the operating system had a vulnerability. It's just a reminder. It's like the idiot light on a dashboard. It's like, yeah, if your car overheats and there's smoke coming out of the hood from steam and the light goes on, you overheat. Well, yeah, it's telling you what always happened. Yeah. That's what antivirus software is in its purest form. Antivirus software kind of is designed to eliminate some of the infections, but for the most part, malware writers are not that stupid. They know how to get around. They could put malware in parts of your computer that Windows can't even reach. Anybody ever hear of a rootkit?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody know what it is? Keep in mind, in the structure of a hard drive, Windows itself is not the first thing it loads. Is something, there's a boot manager and a boot sector to tell the hard drive how to handle the information on the rest of the hard drive, where to find that those operating system files and stuff like that. Something like a rootkit or a boot sector virus, sometimes they're referred to, installs itself in the root of the hard drive in a place that Windows does not even exist, meaning nothing that you could do within Windows could fix that. So the antivirus software may be able to detect that it's, you're infected, but it can't really do anything as far as fixing that. So this is why prevention is really, you know, very important. Even when antivirus software can fix the problem, a lot of times it leaves things broken. Has anyone ever had that happen? Your antivirus software has eliminated something, but you find stuff's not working right. There's been a few that I've seen that actually will break file associations. You can eliminate the virus, but all of a sudden you can't open any files. I mean, if antivirus software is the whole mainstay of your security plan, sorry to tell you, but it's going to hurt. It's good to have it. You know, pick the one you want. And I think there was an article in PC World a couple months back, and I'll send the link out to the list. It talks about free antivirus software, which ones it recommends, doesn't recommend. It was kind of a little bit of misinformation being spread out there about Microsoft not supporting Microsoft Security Essentials anymore. I kind of looked into it. I actually have a good contact to Microsoft that says that's not true. It's still being supported. That's the one I've always recommended because it's very unintrusive. I mean, you don't want to bring down your system, so I still will tell you that that's fine.
Are there antivirus software packages that you know of which are either particularly accessible or inaccessible?
I've never really seen one that's fully accessible. Microsoft Security Essentials is the closest to accessibility, full accessibility you get if you're using a screen reader.
Which one's the most
I'll take your pick. They're all pretty bad. I mean, it could be Norton, Webroot is pretty bad. Kaspersky is fairly inaccessible. There was a little bit of a, you know, miscommunication out there. Someone from Microsoft said something that kind of... He was actually saying something very flippant about antivirus software in general. It was taken to mean that, you know, Microsoft doesn't take antivirus software seriously, but...
Sorry, I can't say the same about mine, because I just found some malware, including a Trojan.
What we've been talking about now is things that happen that are not necessarily programs themselves. They're actually pieces of code that go into the operating system, into system files, or, you know, in the Windows registry. Next part of the discussion is really programs that purport to be one thing and turn out to be another, you know, Trojan horse syndrome. That group of software, what they call spyware, even though the term spyware comes from the fact that, generally speaking, that when these malicious programs came out, a lot of it was to spy on you, to either from doing anything from just monitor your internet activity, see what ads to send you, all the way up to actually keyloggers that steal your information. But there's also some more, even more insidious types of it. Those types of malicious software, you know, the Trojan horses, that spyware group that we're talking about, those are something that you need to install. You need to be tricked into installing. Well, at a minimum, downloading. Yeah. So those don't exploit vulnerabilities in the operating system. They exploit vulnerabilities in you. The group of software that are exploiting vulnerabilities in the operating system is called worms. That's what Jerry's talking about, being on a network.
Somebody had to pay for a damage that they did to my computer. But what happened was there was a dialogue that was coming up that I knew was some type of malware or worm, and I was ignoring and I was saying no. And this guy was using my computer, and he didn't know what to say no to.
He said yes.
Collect something crashed. I guess that's the time to call in a technician and take a look at what...
Depends on your comfort level. And, you know, time is money. A technician sitting in front of your computer is racking up the bill pretty quick. If you have your data backed up, it may be quicker and cheaper just to reformat, start over, and be up and running in a couple hours. It's a time-cost analysis you have to do. How much time is it worth for you to start fixing it rather than to wipe it out and rebuild it? There's programs like Trojan Horses that will, even though you do everything we just talked about, you still end up getting them. And that's true because they didn't trick the operating system. They tricked you. There's ways of counteracting that. First of all, is educate yourself. What programs... really, what things are you actually trying to install? You know, if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. You know, very rarely is there a free ride in life. Yeah. The other thing, too, is that you could try to using some software that is designed to identify spyware. One of the ones I happen to like is Malwarebytes. That's really easy to use. It's free, as it should be. I don't think paying for this type of stuff is a good strategy either. It kind of feeds into the whole scenario a little bit. What that'll do is that'll look at the programs that are installed, and the files, and see if there's anything in any known Trojan horses. Usually those are pretty good about being, as far as the ability of the software to eliminate those. And the reason for that is that those are installed on the operating system, on the user level, as opposed to something that's either at the root level or deeper into the operating system. So that you have pretty good luck at getting rid of those. Now, Jerry, how did you find out that you had one?
I started getting some ad pages that kind of coming up.
Okay, typical spyware. Yeah. And then, were you able to get rid of it?
Yes, I used malware.
There you go.
Malware bytes.
Exactly. Those are not as dangerous because usually those could be removed a lot easier. Not to say that's good, but...
No, I think I actually got them by installing something.
There you go. Okay. A couple of things you could do. Has anybody ever looked at the properties of a file? Let's take a hypothetical example. What's a Lady Gaga song? Since we'll pick it on it, we might as well just keep it up.
5 megabytes long,
MP3. Yeah. Say you have a MP3 file, and then you look at the properties, and it's much bigger than it should be, and the properties tell you that it's a program, not a file. What do you think happened there? It's a Trojan horse. Yeah.
So that's what a malware byte is doing, looking at these files. And
it's comparing a database of, that's why your malware bytes, would you want to update a database? It has a database that's like updated like every day. The free stuff is what I would actually target the most, because why is it free? Say you got you're on the internet, and you get something that says, please scan your computer, because malware bytes. Would you click on that?
No.
A lot of people would. There's a lot of phony antivirus, anti-spyro programs out there, and they generally are.
What about registering for things?
Give me an example, because there's different ways of registering for things.
Oh, let's say you want to get, you're going to your travel site, mm-hmm. and you know you want to find out the, cheap fares or something, and they need to register. But it's like a third party. It's not like American Airlines or something.
If your computer is clean, it's not running any key logging software, they can only get the information that you voluntarily give them. Here's a good one, phishing scams. For instance, your bank sends you something and says, we need you to verify your account number, PIN, and social security number.
No.
But then there's registering for sites. The reason they do that is for marketing information. Legitimate sites, they're doing that for marketing information. And legitimately, they should never ask for anything that compromises your safety. What kind of things are they asking you for?
Username, password, email.
Exactly, okay.
Yeah.
Again, I'm hoping everyone has multiple email accounts. You have at least one junk email account that you don't care what ends up in it. In a case like that, you could say, I'm Joe Schmo, and here's my junk email account. Don't voluntarily give them real name or anything like that. If you choose to buy the product, then you may have to give them your name. But just registering for sites, there's no reason to do that. Think about what you're being asked to give. If you're being asked to give anything sensitive, you probably want to check first. The other thing, too, is when you go to a website and, I don't know if you ever experienced where it asks you to install something, piece of software, or something pops up, you get a little bleep, you want to... the temptation is to just say, I'll install stuff. Try using the website without doing that. A lot of times, it's not necessary to use the website with whatever they're asking you to install. In fact, a lot of times, the websites could be infected and not even know it. There's a story out there about Mother Teresa, the late Mother Teresa's. Her website was infected with some sort of software that actually installed a keylog on people's computers. And usually it comes in the form of banner ads and stuff like that. Stuff that there may actually be some scripting involved. And because the ads go through a third party, say timcummings.com, Tim, to generate revenue, he hires a third party ad company and they may be compromised. He may never see that infected ad. So he may not know that there's a vulnerability on his site.
I got a notification that my Twitter account had been hacked. How does that happen?
The old-fashioned database hack. A database hack is where you take a known username, and Twitter, all of usernames are public, obviously, and just use a database of words to try to see if anything works. Do you know any idea when it happened? Like, were you someplace that you normally wouldn't be?
It happened about a month after I was on vacation, and I was using Foursquare, which I don't normally use.
I wouldn't think that Foursquare would be an issue, but the fact that you're on vacation may be an issue. Vacation spots are notorious for what they call packet sniffing, meaning that you're using an open Wi-Fi network in a hotel or a cafe, and there's someone on that network monitoring all the traffic on a network using something called a packet sniffer, which is why I didn't want to connect to the MIT network, because public networks are very vulnerable for that. So you never want to do anything sensitive on a public network.
I wasn't even connecting directly to Twitter. I was just going to Foursquare, and Foursquare was sending messages via Twitter.
Well, if I understand correctly, any app that uses your Twitter account has to transmit your password.
Right.
And it does go across the wire in clear time, the text. So.
Can I ask a question about public networks? So let's say you have your laptop, you go to Starbucks and places like that, and you open their free Wi-Fi. Are you taking big risks?
Oh, yeah.
You could be. And there's some ways you could limit the risks. One of the things that people like to do is they like to set up a fake hotspot. Like you'll see a Wi-Fi network says like Starbucks Wireless. It could not, maybe it's not even really their network. could be someone sitting in the back parking lot, you know, with their cell phone, creating a network, and you connect to that. So first of all, you want to kind of like find out what is their real network. And you could just find out by asking someone at the counter, what is your SSID of your network? So that's the first thing. The other thing too is that in newer versions of Windows, do you notice how it kind of asks you what kind of network this is when you connect to a network?
Yeah.
Public
work. What it's actually doing is it's setting your firewall to different settings. Public network, generally it locks down your firewall fairly safely. Meaning someone cannot exploit certain ports on your network. Work network, it kind of opens up a little more, and the home network, pretty much wide open. In the public network, obviously, if it gives you a choice, you always want to set to public network. The other thing, too, is that you got to be very careful about what you're transmitting. First, a couple things you have to ask yourself. Is it 100% necessary for me to do, like, my online banking or something super sensitive at this hotspot? And if you find yourself answering yes to that question a lot, you're probably going to want to bring your own hotspot with you. Like, I hook up to my phone a lot. I do know in some agencies, both public and private, state or federal, you're not even allowed to hook a computer up to a public network. Well, like Jerry said, he found his spyware, but eliminated by running Malwarebytes. I would do that on a regular basis, yeah. I mean, it's...
But you don't pay for Malwarebytes, right?
Maybe. When you install Malwarebytes, there's a choice at the end, and it says, the choice says, install a free trial of Malwarebytes Active Protection, I think the wording is. And what it does is that runs all the time to try to do a continuous scan all the time. That's not necessary. In fact, that will just slow down your computer. So if you do not check that and just run it manually yourself, then it's free. You only pay for that. What is time to time?
Yeah.
If you're fairly safe with your practices, your computer practices, you're not going for a lot of free stuff, you're not downloading, you're not getting files from your kids and anything like that, once every 2 weeks. I mean, I probably run mine once every month.
It only says that it's outdated if you go a period of time.
Yeah, does it give you the option to update?
Yeah, so then you update, and then you run it.
Yeah.
And that's what you should do?
Yeah, remember we talked about how it's looking for certain signatures, actual definitions of known pieces of spyware. When it does that update, that's actually downloading that database that it has, yeah.
Frank, does Microsoft Security Essentials, does that update automatically, or do you have to update that manually? Because I do update it manually every once in a while. But
it will update automatically.
It will, okay.
Yeah. Sometimes you get a little message saying, your computer is at risk. Generally, that means that your computer was turned off at the time it wanted to do it. Is the question, do you think you should have more than one antivirus at a time on a computer?
Yes.
The answer to that is no. And the reason being is that, these are programs that are running all the time looking at system files. And the reason you never want to have two of those things running at the same time is that if you have, a legitimate antivirus program opening and closing system files, what does the other antivirus program think? You'll have two fighting each other and thus rendering your system kind of like, hey, it's probably going to bring your system to a screeching halt. And even if it doesn't do that, you probably negated any effect of having antivirus on in the first place.
Frank, where do you get the Malwarebytes from?
Google download Malwarebytes. Yeah. It's right there. When you buy a new computer, and after you set everything else up, set up your accessibility software, your antivirus, next step you want to go is into programs and features, if it's on a Mac, you go into your applications. You really won't find this on a Mac, but you want to go into programs and features, and you want to go down and look at every program that's installed on your computer. There's a category of programs called bloatware. It's software installed from the factory that is designed to make the computer look more attractive when you're comparing it to other computers on show. Has all these little things added in for it. And sometimes they're free, and sometimes they're just trials. You know, most of these programs run at startup, they're always there. In the least thing that I could do is just slow down your computer. Worst case scenario is that, everything that you have running in the background of the computer is one potential security risk. There are vulnerabilities with these sort of pieces of bloatware that malware writers have exploited. But the worst thing about these is that generally they all somehow involve popping something up. Like you talk about the Dell utility trying to pop up an update. The worst thing about this is it becomes very confusing as to what is normal bloatware and what is really malicious software. So what you want to do on a new computer after you did all the things we just talked about, go down that list. You'll see that there's surprisingly a lot of junk. Okay.
Right. How do you sort of know what is junk versus essential stuff? Because if you're not a technician, all of it is inexplicable, and of course you're scared to delete something.
And this is also true with updates sometimes, from Windows Update, like Vinod was saying, well, do I want to install that version of Internet Explorer? Anything that looks weird, like if you see eBay.com, do you think your computer needs that?
No.
Okay. So you look for all the obvious stuff first. You get rid of all that. Like PC, pit stop, all sorts of nonsense. Get rid of all the obvious stuff. Then look for stuff that looks like it may start up by itself, which is a lot of stuff. And your source of reference is Google. Type in what is and put in the exact term that you saw in programs and features. You'll find that anywhere up to maybe one third of the programs you see there are unnecessary.
I have a Lenovo laptop. Mm-hmm. And it's got stuff.
Like, for instance, there's like a ThinkPad on screen magnifier.
Yeah.
ThinkPad communications utility.
Yeah.
That's crapware.
Okay.
It's there to be attractive to the purchaser. You're looking at a Lenovo and a Dell and an Asus on the shelf at a computer store. They show you those things. So it becomes a free this, free that, free this. And a lot of times it's not really free because it's only free for 90 days a year, something like that. But that stuff really is insidious because A, it takes up a lot of system resources. It really brings the computer down. B, it kind of makes you insensitive or desensitizes you to what may be real threats.
Frank, when you said you looked at the property to determine what kind of file, what exactly did you look at to determine whether it was a program or
well, first of all, I look at the full program name. Does it, you know, does it have like an exe in it? Does it say like, so a lot of times you'll, you know, have a program and say favorite song .mp3.exe.
And that means?
It's a program that will run. Yeah,
you
generally don't want that. File sizes, I mean, if someone sends you what purports to be a term paper in Word format, but it's like 20 megabytes, yeah, it's just wrong. Yeah. Your best friend is Google. If it's bad, if it's out there, someone else has already had to, you know, run in with it. Used to be a category of thumb drives called U3 thumb drives, which had the ability to run software automatically on them. Those have kind of gone away now, thankfully. You notice that when you plug a thumb drive in, depending on what version of the operating system you have, it does either ask you what to do or just goes ahead and does something. That action is known as auto-run. What is it auto-running? Is your auto-run setting set to turn off that it doesn't automatically run anything when you plug in the thumb drive? Or is it set to automatically run what's on the thumb drive? For instance, I think in Windows 7, the default is that it asks you. In Windows 8, I think it's totally turned off. To protect yourself is look again at the files that are on a thumb drive. That's what's really going to affect you. You could open the thumb drive and look at the files. You just don't want to auto-run anything. Like some of the other choices are run setup.exe. That's pretty dangerous. That's something you want to avoid. Or open photographs. And again, you want to be careful with that one because they could be Trojans like we talked about. Yeah. So you just want to open it in Windows Explorer and look at the files. Look at what will be running. Does everyone know how to turn off a startup program? If you want to turn off startup programs, in the run dialog, you put in msconfig. That'll get you to the configuration dialog. One of the tabs is startup. And I typically recommend running as little startup as possible.
Thanks very much.